So yeah, any questions? Just don't even raise your hand. Just shout it out. Hi. The title of this chapter is called "Not All Poverty Is Created Equal," and the goal of this chapter is to get us to think about differences in different situations and how to respond to it, which we've touched on a little before. So it starts out and says that you turn on the news, you see a tsunami is happening in Indonesia. The people need resources such as food, clothing, shelter. We understand that. Then you later, maybe you turn on the news again, and you see a special on some homeless people in the city, and they seem to need food, clothing, shelter. But is there a difference in these situations? Do we think about them differently, and do we respond differently? So there were two exercises which maybe we can discuss about that. But one is, says, think about the materially poor people in North America who have asked you or your church for immediate financial assistance. Under what conditions do you believe it would be appropriate to give things or money to these people? And the second question was, think about any ministry to the poor that you or your church has conducted in the majority world. For example, a short-term mission trip. Under what conditions do you believe it would be appropriate for you or your church to give things or money to these people? And then are our answers different in those two categories, and why? That's your cue.
Sorry. Evernote is launching. Hang on.
So under what conditions would we think it would be appropriate to?
Yeah. Like, say there's someone poor in this town.
Their situation, why they're in this situation that they're in, and what exactly do they need? Is there any way I can help them help themselves?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I know I don't have to raise my hand, but one thing is to definitely look at the bigger context, so I don't think you can answer a question without the situations in the two cases.
Sure.
So, I mean, I've heard of examples of, like, people drilling wells in Africa where it helped for a little while, but then the people, it was just, like, they didn't take ownership of the well, so when the day it stopped working, then they just went back to getting water out of the river and so on. So, there's
an
example of maybe helping is okay, but the way it's done has to be done the way that it's done differently so that people do take ownership of the well.
Right.
Can maintain it. So, same thing applies here. When I get panhandled on the street, it doesn't even so much in Stillwater. You know, I always say no.
Right.
Because, I mean, most of the money would go just to more substance abuse. You know, so that's, I might be wrong in some cases, but that's generally what I think. So,
right.
So I think it depends on the situation in both cases.
It's easier to give money or resources to any tragedy. It's easier to think, they need help immediately. And you don't question why they need help.
Sure.
Tornado victims, you don't question whether it's appropriate or not. Whereas it's harder on a day-to-day basis because you do question, does the person really need food, or are they going to turn around and do something with it, or could they actually get a job? Or you're much more skeptical to help.
Right.
That in those situations.
Well, I think that's partly because if somebody gets hit by a tsunami, you think, well, whatever, it's not their fault they got hit by a tsunami.
Right.
It's not like they drank too much, that's why they got hit by a tsunami. So.
Right. I think that's what these two questions at the front of the chapter are supposed to get us to think about. And the main thrust of this chapter is what I put up there. You have different stages of, or different areas you can help them in. So the first one, disaster strikes, you need to help with relief. That's essentially the book says stop the bleeding. They're bleeding, they're hurt, you need to, you know, just flood in there. There's not a whole lot of question or, you know, background or, you know, I don't know, asking them questions about their family history and all of this stuff before you're willing to give aid. They're hurting. But then there's other situations to think about, and that's where the author of the book later says that there's not a whole lot of people that are in the relief situation in America. Most of us probably don't know anybody or may have not even met anybody who's in that situation. But we do see a lot of people in the rehabilitation or development stages. So our context is more that. Maybe when a disaster strikes overseas or... I don't know. I have a hard time putting Moore in that situation, the tornado that struck there. But in the relief. I don't know. What's that? In some ways. Just, I don't know. There's a lot of aid. There's a lot of... I don't know. That's something to think about.
The people who lost their homes, that lot needed housing.
Oh, sure.
There's no question of that. So that would probably be in the relief category.
Right.
Yeah, but beyond that, probably the next night they could find friends or family.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe some churches down there, I think, and other organizations, they did open up shelters and such for people to just come in and sleep there that night or wherever they're displaced.
Yeah.
So maybe that's immediate relief, but quickly can turn to rehabilitation. Some don't have family in the area to go sleep at their house, kind of like those.
Sure.
I can see maybe very early stages, they need a roof over their head for the next 12 hours, you know, or something.
Okay, so the main ideas behind relief, it's an urgent and temporary provision of emergency aid to reduce immediate suffering from a natural or man-made crisis. So you want to stop the freefall, you want to stop the bleeding. You are in the situation of being a provider, they are a receiver. Now, in rehabilitation or development, you want to come alongside them perhaps and help them learn to develop that themselves. But here, in this situation, they really don't have anything that you can come alongside of. So you do end up being the provider and they're the receiver. They say that the Good Samaritan is an example of relief that's applied appropriately. There was a situation where you were literally stopping the bleeding. Okay, rehabilitation seeks to restore people and their communities to the positive elements of their pre-crisis condition. So now the bleeding has stopped and the restoration begins, and you can come alongside them and help them with that restoration, help them build themselves back up. The key feature here is working with people as they participate in their own recovery. And that does happen here in the States as well. Development, it's a process of ongoing change that moves all the people involved, both the helpers and the helped, closer to being in right relationship with God, self, others, and the rest of creation. So this, the authors say, is largely a relational problem. And as poor people develop, as you come alongside and help with that development, then they're better able to fulfill their calling of glorifying God and are able to work and support their families with the fruit of that work. It's absolutely crucial that we determine whether relief, rehabilitation, or development is the appropriate interventions. And I think one of the mistakes that we in North America fall into is essentially applying relief to a lot of situations. We're just giving money or aid when the bleeding really has stopped, and perhaps development or rehabilitation is the more appropriate response. The last characteristic of development, you are not doing this to or for people, but you are doing this with people. And that's often hard. We talked before about the God complex that we often have. It's a temptation. It's very easy to fall into that mindset that perhaps we're more superior or more intelligent, we have more knowledge, we can help, they don't know enough to help themselves. That's not necessarily the case. Okay, so mainly we were going to be talking and thinking about the distinction between each of these and how we can distinguish between them and apply relief or aid or material things to the people in the different situations. So here's something that I would like to discuss, because we've had this happen in our church before, but someone comes to the church looking for emergency help on utility bills, rent, food, transportation, and they say they need relief. Now, is relief what they need?
To get a little bit, just thinking about our society today, we think we need a lot more than we really do to get by. I mean, everybody thinks you have to have a car. Yeah, maybe not.
Sure.
It's nice. Our city's designed for cars, but you can walk, you can bike, etc. So, I mean, it gets a little tricky when you really think about what are the fundamentals.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a warm home, ability to cook your food, all that's very important.
So in that situation, would you just turn the person away, or what would you do?
It's tricky. That's tricky, too.
This is all
in
very tricky.
In some sense, I keep thinking of the passage where Christ just says, whoever would borrow from you, lend, you know, it almost is like, it's like, before God, you doing good to them is pleases him, we have limited knowledge, but it's true that won't solve the entire problem.
Mm-hmm.
In most cases, I think it's probably not a need to think about.
Sure.
Right. I mean, there could be the occasional case where there's relief, but for the most part, it's because they didn't manage their finances, they couldn't hold down a job.
Right.
And so on. So
maybe if you could give relief while still encouraging further knowledge of the person himself, that mm-hmm. way you can actually help them more in the future.
Yeah.
What do we do? I mean, they think they need relief.
Right.
So how do you be working with two different attitudes, and so that's where you can come across as superior,
mm-hmm.
know-it-all. I mean, they knew this may be all that they know.
Right.
So how do we, so it has to come from their heart attitude also.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so again, it's more of a long-term situation and their willingness
mm-hmm.
To learn and to change. And, you know, we may not be the group of people to do it, but there may be another group that, or somebody else. So, I mean, I think we get too discouraged because we say, oh, they rejected us. Well, there may be somebody else along the line that plays a part, and I don't think maybe it all happens all at once.
No.
There may be different people coming in and out of their lives, teaching them. So I don't think we should be discouraged when we think, oh, well, I didn't see any change here.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the end of the story. So, and to be, like Jonathan said, to be compassionate, you know, it's better probably to err on that side than to be.
I do think that the compassion would be a big component of that. Like the situation where the person, maybe they have a nice car or something, but they're wanting aid. I don't think it would be very helpful to say, well, you just need to sell your car. I'm not going to help you, but you need to sell your car. Maybe that's something they've not really considered or thought about. And you can try to come alongside and suggest things, but at the same time, being compassionate and not just...
Maybe that's the only possession that they have that gives them any sense of pride and self-worth. That,
yeah.
You know, tell them to get rid of that.
Yeah.
From our perspective, that's a silly thing to have, but...
Right. From my perspective, you could get rid of a cell phone and save you a monthly bill, but okay. Not everyone is in that situation or thinks that that's a possibility.
Church in Pittsburgh made it a habit of meeting a request if somebody came the first time. And then if they came again, it was, okay, we can meet that again, but we need you to theme of church, or something in exchange, or we have to sit down and help you with your finances, or whatever. And sometimes it worked, and sometimes people did not like the strings attached to that, and they would just go somewhere else.
Sure.
Some people, after we gave them money for the first time, we never saw them again because there was enough. They knew the circuit.
Yes. Yeah.
So they didn't have to come back and ask again. But
that's something that's mentioned in the.
We kind of felt like we don't know their situation, and they're not going to tell us their situation until they trust us a little bit more. To earn their trust, we would pay the bill. Yeah, we did have a few people that hung around. Worked for their.
Yeah, I think we think they wake up every morning and think, ooh, I'm going to see who I can get today. I mean, really, they have very short-term plans for their life. So it's like, oh, I don't have a meal. What do I do? It's not like they really don't plan ahead.
Right.
Sometimes, you know, to give them the benefit of the doubt, it's not a big conspiracy in their life to see how much, and for some people I'm sure it is, but for a lot of them, it's just this. You just deal with what the day throws at you.
Yeah. I've often wondered, too, if we get a little bit jaded sometimes just because we only see that side of those type of people. And maybe they're a tiny minority of who's really out there and needs aid. And, yes, Jeff?
Not to be hard-hearted, but there are people who, that is, they are fully developed in the road of seeking relief.
Yeah.
Presenting ourselves as needing relief.
So. Yeah. There's a system, by the way, that's going on in Stillwater for helping that kind of situation with the Stillwater Cares group and this common screening process. There was a group of churches several years ago that, as everybody was talking about, the biggest problems that we have with relief organizations and rehabilitation and development organizations in Stillwater. The biggest problem that was identified was that people would go from place to place, or some would, and nobody's talking to each other, so they either fall through the cracks or they work the system.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what's been the. It's finally getting off the ground now, and this common screening process was developed to try to get everybody, it's voluntary, but to try to get everybody to coordinate so that when somebody comes and gives a story,
right.
Especially the to help the people who legitimately need help get it and not be hurt by the ones who are giving a bad name for that whole group by working the system. You can identify both groups and say this person's given three different stories to the previous three people he's called today. But this one hasn't. Here's somebody who, you know, legitimately might be in a situation where temporary relief might be necessary. Judge the case a little bit better and see what somebody's doing.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good point. We live in a day and age where there's just so many people in one town, you can't keep up with it. But we do have technology. We do have a connection to share that information in a public way.
Right.
So I guess we need to adapt to the new world.
It should be a little bit easier to collaborate among you, you know, groups for that situation that's identified there.
Sure.
I've wondered if when somebody comes asking for help with the utility bill, it's thinking back to earlier chapters too, there's... It might be more difficult and more costly to us if instead of giving the relief, we might occasionally give to find out, is it winter? Are there children involved?
Mm-hmm.
How urgent is it? Is there gas going to be shut off now? Which usually, by the way, ONG doesn't turn off people's gas in the dead of winter. Often, when it actually could be life-threatening situations. Mm-hmm. Now, there could be some discomfort summer months or something, but not life-threatening in the winter. It could be life-threatening. They generally don't cut off people's gas in those kind of situations, so it may not be as urgent as we think, but
right.
It might be more costly to say, well, you know, we might be able to help, but first of all, can we find out a little bit more about your situation, maybe even help working with the creditor. I'm not saying the city of Stillwater will always take this, but to call and find out how many bills are late, is there any way this person could get a few more days, maybe coming alongside to say, before we just give you the money, we might be able to get a few extra days or a couple of weeks to pay, in which case, what's your job situation? it's going to take more effort. I'm going to investigate this situation, oh, yeah. Maybe make some phone calls. I mean, it's going to be harder. Or at least the second time around, like I mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the first time, but then trying to develop an ongoing, you're going to have to pay the bill next month, too, so
right.
I need to see how to avoid this next month, see where your situation is.
Yeah. So some suggested things to think about are, is it really a crisis? And that might take getting to know the person to determine. If you don't help, will there be serious consequences, or will it be, like you were saying, well, they missed that bill, they don't turn off the gas anyway. Maybe that's not a serious consequence. It would go on their credit score, I'm sure, but then also trying to realize that even though we want to be compassionate, sometimes there has to be pain in order to learn a lesson. And are we hindering learning a lesson by eliminating that part of the process? Also, is that person in any way able to help himself, or can his family help them? We might be interfering in a situation where they can learn stewardship or become better stewards just because we're essentially being a steward of their money for them or their bills. And then also, like we've discussed plenty here, is this person going to help other or ask others for help in the future, or has he been hopping from church to church or place to place? And that's an indication of a different problem, not just a situation needing immediate relief. So it's easier in the U.S. or North America to think about how we can identify situations like this, but what about in majority world countries where there's a lot of poor and suffering there? The temptation sometimes is that you see so much poverty, so much suffering, to then again just go ahead and give out the aid. You know, they obviously need it far more than we've seen anybody in the States need it. But I think the same principles would apply if you're helping a country there. There's a really good example story in the book that I'd like to read. It's the savings and loan in the Philippines. I really like that story. So to illustrate, consider the Savings and Credit Association affiliated with Jehovah Jireh Church, a congregation located in a slum in Manila, the Philippines. Each of the members of this Savings and Credit Association lives on approximately $1 to $5 per day. Each member of the association deposits into the group just 20 cents per week, which the association uses to make very small interest-bearing loans to the members. In addition, each member contributes 5 cents per week to the association's emergency fund, which can be used to provide relief for members facing an emergency crisis. From a North American perspective, these people are extremely poor. In this light, it is instructive to consider the policies that the Savings and Credit Association developed for its emergency fund. Money from the fund is lent, not given, at a 0% interest rate to group members whose family members get sick. No assistance is available for people who have had their electricity or water cut off for not paying their utility bills. According to the group, such a situation does not constitute an emergency, since electric and water bills are regular household expenditures for which they should all be prepared. The group will not even give emergency loans for hospitalization for giving birth, because the family had 9 months to prepare for the delivery of the baby. Finally, the amount of the loan from the emergency fund is limited to the amount of the savings contributions of the member getting the loan. Members of this Savings and Credit Association are tough cookies. Now, what happens when a North American church encounters the members of Jehovah Jireh Church's Savings and Credit Association? We often project our own ideas of what is an acceptable standard of living onto the situation and are quick to take a relief approach, doling out money in ways that the local people would consider unwise and dependence-creating. And in the process, we can undermine local judgment, discipline, accountability, stewardship, savings, and institutions. In fact, research has shown that the injection of outside funds into these savings and credit groups typically dooms them to collapse. The point here is not that the policies of Jehovah Jireh's Savings and Credit Association are normative for all churches in all contexts. The point is that, in deciding if relief is the appropriate intervention, we must be careful lest we impose our own cultural assumptions into contexts that we do not understand very well. I think that kind of goes back to what we've talked about, too, about getting to know the we're getting in contact with the institutions that are already involved with the people, because they understand the local context far more than we do. Although at the same time, would you want to share your story, Meg, about the setting up of the store for the men to buy Christmas presents and...
Not to put you on the spot.
Well, we had churches contact us that they wanted to give Christmas presents to the kids. And we did that once, and then we decided it would be much better to have a store, a Christmas store, that was only open like a month before Christmas, and churches could donate toys and coats and whatever was necessary, and we would sell stuff, just 25 cents or 50 cents, and then the mothers and dads could come and buy Christmas presents for their kids in store. Picking a family and giving it, and to us it was a great idea, but none of the suburban churches wanted to contribute that way. They wanted to know Johnny got this, they wanted a list from a family, they didn't want to just generically give us, and they couldn't see the value of the people being allowed to buy their kids their own presents, and they just wanted to be... To me, it was, they wanted to have the credit of saying, oh, I gave these five children Christmas this year.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't want to say, not knowing who got what present. It didn't work.
May I make a comment on this?
Sure.
I remember one year there was an opportunity for churches to adopt a needy family in Stillwater. And I can't remember if we were, it was a long time ago. I can't remember if it was this, if it was the RP church or the other church we were going to at the time. But we were never assigned anybody. Nobody, no needy family was assigned to our church. It was like they didn't want, the people that we thought would be needy didn't want it.
Maybe.
It was interesting.
In Meg's situation, that seems, just trying to process that through. So here's a classic, exact situation right out of what they're talking about here, where mm-hmm. the suburban church just wanted to apply relief. They thought it was their need to mm-hmm. come in and give these presents. And they wanted to be able to know, and I can see, I can understand that. They want to be able to feel like they really helped these particular children and have a good Christmas and everything, and that really makes them feel good, and they feel like it really helped. But the local church knew that that's actually not as helpful and was ready to do some rehabilitation. And I don't know whether that, I'm still been working through with the differences between rehabilitation and development, kind of, but it's somewhere in that range. It's gray between those saying, no, we're going to work with these people. We want to let them in, feel like they got to buy something, even if it was at a steep discount. We have a goal in mind to get come alongside with these people and help them do it, and we need supplies from you to help facilitate that. Mm-hmm. But they wanted to do relief only.
Mm-hmm.
And it was damaging, and the local church knew what to do. And here are these people from the outside who weren't trusting the local people who had a pretty good idea of what's going to be most helpful here.
Yeah.
That's pretty common, I think.
I also had a women's group from the suburbs call me. They wanted to give my kids' club kids a present. And I said, well, I have 50 kids. So you'd have to do 50 presents. I can't. It won't work otherwise. Oh, yeah. And then, so I had to drive out to go get the presents. And then it was, they had only collected 20. About 10 of them were porcelain china dolls. And she was like, no. And I'd given her suggestions that were, $5 gifts, And they didn't listen to any of the suggestions. And none of it was useful. But, they felt really good about what they had done. And told me they'd do it again next year.
See, what'd you do today?
You jumped on eBay and sold all that stuff.
Yeah.
In the box of $5.
So what'd you do with it?
Oh, I tried to sell it at the kids. We had a store once a month. We tried to sell it there, but they didn't sell.
They weren't useful.
We didn't have enough suburban people to have our store.
Well, at another point in this chapter, they also talk about how hard it is sometimes to get donors to donate for things like this, the rehabilitation or development, because you know, it's much easier to say, well, you know, I donated and helped out 1,000 people with my big donation than it is to say, well, we used your donation to talk to and get to know, you know, a couple dozen people. Maybe that's not what they're looking for or want.
That's not only the case in Christian ministry, but universities.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
Universities find it comparatively easy to raise money for undergraduate scholarships because the donor base as a whole are people who've been to university and were undergraduate students and can remember what it was like 40 years ago or whatever when they were students.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's a little more complicated story, then it's a lot harder for them to raise funds also.
Hmm.
Same is true with still online services, where it's difficult to get grants for operating costs and salaries and such. No, which I can understand some of that. You know, people be worried about, you know, whether or not we're just self-reciprocating or how many people are we helping, which usually is what we have to be able to present and say, here's right. how we're helping people, here's how we're counseling and working with people. But it's hard. A lot of grants are not set up to donate to any of that, to fund any of that. A building project or some other specific
right.
thing, well, that would be different.
Yeah. How do you quantify and present the numbers of how you've made a difference in a few people's lives? Okay, so moving on to the next section for rehabilitation. I'm going to have to move quicker here. I was going to mention Stillwater and Life Services. I think that's an excellent place that we have in town that's available for the rehabilitation or development for both. Do we have any other organizations in Stillwater that do that sort of thing? I know Terry Carpenter has done a lot of work like that.
Specifically with that same community of people, just kind of more the sexual health, the young mothers, that sort of thing?
Just any kind of rehabilitation.
I know it's interesting that one other organization in town that is involved kind of in a similar market, if you will, as Door Life Services, Relief Do We Really Do? Well, there's a little bit. I mean, the pregnancy tests are free, ultrasounds are free, and so on, but I think there's kind of a different reason why those are free. Not usually that people can't afford a pregnancy test, that might happen a few times, but more of a way to just break down barriers to get people to come in and start rehab and development and so on.
Yeah.
But there's a, you know, there's a market where they can buy things, but they have to earn some credits to be able to buy things in the market. So one of these other organizations that I know of has, at times at least, seemed to be kind of a bit more relief oriented.
Salvation Army does a little bit of all of those.
Would you say it's a philosophy, a development type thing? Because it teaches and isn't really a money-based sort of thing, but it teaches skills in English and I don't know.
There is small outreach like that, and then for making people able to get a job immediately. There's some help for getting them to be able to, you know,
prepping something for school or job.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know a whole lot about Habitat for Humanity, but the things that I see with people working for the house themselves and being required to put in so many hours and really take ownership of that project, I really appreciated that.
And I don't know how much the gospel is presented.
Right. No, it may be. I don't know if they receive aid from governmental or other organizations, but if that's the case, then they may not.
The Wings of Hope, the domestic violence shelter, right up on Airport Road there. I don't know lot about what goes on there. There are battered women, mostly battered women there. That's where they go to try to steal a lot of, I think, rehab and development.
Mm-hmm.
Some pretty nasty family situations. Refer a lot of people there. There's domestic violence issues, which are quite prevalent.
Yeah. Yeah.
A relief story that to show that I didn't know at all. But my I guess it was pretty short after I moved in. I had one of my moms suggest that we do a Thanksgiving dinner for the kids club and their families, and of course I had the attitude of, oh, these people are too poor to afford a Thanksgiving dinner. So what a great idea. And I got a church to donate turkeys. And I farmed turkeys out to the people in the church to cook the turkeys during the day. And I think I made like 50 pounds of mashed potatoes. I burned some big candy jar. We had 60 people sign up for coming to this dinner. And we set up the church, and we made all this food, and we had a couple of friends that roped into having Thanksgiving this way with me. Two people showed up.
What happened to the turkeys?
Well, we ended up starting to make plates and passing them door to door to families that were at home watching TV. You know, I found out that, you know, family is huge. No matter how poor they are, their family is huge. And they're going to get together with their family and eat Doritos if that's all they can afford. But, you know, here I thought, this will be great, it'll be community, it'll be just what they need, and they didn't need that. I had mashed potatoes for a very long
time. You still got some of these.
All kinds of recipes, if you ever have leftover mashed potatoes, what to do with them. But, you know, and then that same mother, the very next year, who didn't show up that year, suggested that we have a Thanksgiving dinner. It's like, no, did that. But, you know, I thought, this is great, and the churches were behind it. They just couldn't believe what a great idea.
It was like the turkeys.
There was a somewhat a similar story, and you know, it's not necessarily that the people are stupid or don't know how to help themselves. You know, there's a situation where they were more concerned about family than a free turkey dinner. The book mentions a group of farmers, I forget what country it was, Bolivia or something, that you know, they brought in new farming techniques and how to make an average higher yield crop, and after a little while the farmers went back to their old farming methods, and you know, the obvious conclusion was, well, they're too stuck in their ways and they don't know what they're doing, we do. But you know, then they start asking the farmers, and yes, the crops are lower yield that they're doing, but they're also more consistent. Whereas the higher yield crops, sometimes there were very poor years, more poor than they would have otherwise. So they were looking for something that was more stability, something low risk. You know, even the prospect of having higher yield for them, higher yield averages, if they had a bad year, they, you know, couldn't make their payment on whatever loan that they had. Or
yeah, they were mentioning even that they don't have enough base to draw from. Their kids could starve. They have a bad year. They could be a life-threatening situation. They can't afford it.
No.
A downturn in the market for 1 year for them could be paid.
Right. So it's not that they're dumb. You know, they were very well reasoned in this, but we didn't understand the situation. Okay. So the big thing about rehabilitation and development, which we've really talked about a lot already, is the bleeding has stopped. This is not relief anymore. Now we need to come alongside and help them. And one of the things the book said that I found was very helpful to remember is that you treat them like the steward you would have them to be. Ask their opinion on things. You know, get them involved in the situation. Don't avoid paternalism, in other words. You know, try to avoid being the one who will tell them how they should run things. So some various areas of paternalism that they listed here were resource paternalism, when we're giving stuff like clothing, and clothing specifically came to my mind, Are we undermining the local economy, the shop owners who sell clothes themselves? We could be hurting the local economy by doing something like that. And the spiritual paternalism, even pastors, he said, can fall into this. But do we come in there expecting that we're going to teach them how to worship God in the way that North America does it? Maybe that's not necessarily the best way. Maybe they do prayers different. He mentions that prayers in a lot of rural churches are much more involved from the people in the congregation instead of one person praying up front. That's not necessarily right or wrong scripturally, as far as I understand it. But when we come in there and impose our ideas upon them, we tend to be acting paternalistically. Knowledge paternalism, we mentioned that. Do we really understand what the situation is? Is our way of producing crops really better for the local population? Ask the locals. Talk to them. Part of this is understanding that these are people that are created in God's image, and as such, they have the ability to reason, to make rational decisions. Sometimes they don't have knowledge in a certain area. Maybe spiritually they are attached to idol worship, and that's something that needs to be gotten around. Dan mentioning last week about the llamas and the llama fetuses. That's something that does need to be addressed, but there are many situations where the local people are very knowledgeable, even though it doesn't seem like that to an outsider. The next one they mention is labor paternalism. When we go in, are we doing something that they can help with themselves? Are we expecting, I guess that kind of goes with managerial paternalism, but are we expecting certain things to be done a certain way? No, this is how you build a building. This is the time schedule. Come on, get up and do it. Lots of other nations are more laid back than we are. They have slower time frames. They might not be lazy. That's just their culture. The author mentioned one situation that he felt he had really hurt the situation. They went to offer relief to some people in Mississippi, and he remembers seeing the able-bodied young men that lived in the house that they were helping just sitting on the porch watching them. He felt like he did a lot of harm by doing that. So when we come in to help, are we working alongside, or are we working, like, taking over their job? Just things to think about. So a question I had is, you know, we do have an alms collection, and I was wondering, and this is something for the elders to really decide, but what are some ways that we can help in our community? Because we really haven't spent a lot of our alms. Maybe we want to help that hold that for an emergency situation, but what are some local ways that we can help with that? I had a hard time thinking of any. How can we use our resources?
Sponsoring local projects where we could hire people who don't have jobs to do some menial task. Like, hey, this place needs a yard. I'm on mowing the lawn. It's like, hey, we'll pay you some or another to mow this person's lawn or something like that. Or just some task where they can go out and do some work and actually earn something for themselves. Like, learn to provide for themselves. Like, they develop a sense of pride in being able to provide for themselves.
Well, that's something I had not thought of, using the alms fund to help people with jobs and maybe members of the congregation's houses.
It'd be better if that job could produce something that replenished itself and made a cycle. Brought a fig trees.
Give them a fish.
Sure.
Teach them to fish. We should have a fishing teaching class.
Maybe we could use it to pay for them to go to maybe like a boat tech, like there's Meridian, and maybe pay for them to go and learn an actual skill where they could get a job.
Maybe. I'm not sure how much our resources are.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
We could fund a scholarship to Meridian.
Some things to think about. I'd like to think about that more. how we can be more involved with those resources. Yes?
I noticed that with the talents in the congregation, that there might be a way in which we could help too.
Mommy.
Mm.
I wonder if that would be with helping people learn English, or helping them with their high school classwork, or elementary school classwork. What? But I've always thought that there was a great deal of talent here in terms of teaching and tutoring, especially when I'm young. Gail and I haven't found any ideas. But you're thinking of how to use the alms, and it might be that using the alms would be in providing materials for such a tutoring.
Could be.
Outreach.
Yeah.
It's just brainstorming.
But I know we give alms every month, but I guess I want people to be aware we do have that, and we really haven't used much of it.
First, for the people in the congregation.
Maybe. Like I said, that's a decision for the elders ultimately, but I don't know. Well, that's all I have. I'll close in prayer. Thank you, Lord, for the resources you have given us, both in education and monetarily, and the ways you teach us and have led us to yourself. And I pray that we would be willing to share those with those around us, and that you would give wisdom in doing so, that we might be able to apply aid and relief, as well as help rehabilitate and develop those relationships with people we have around us. We do pray, Lord, that you would bring people into our lives that we might be able to help. And may we be gracious and compassionate in doing that. We pray in your name, amen.